Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome into another edition of the Future Stocks Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, joined by my co-host Dylan Barnes. It's been a couple weeks, man. We've been busy, holiday season, all of the above. We hope everybody enjoyed their Thanksgiving. There was a lot going on the past couple weeks in my life and Dylan's life. We're back and we're kind of preparing now as we talk to you all on December 2nd. We are 5 days out from the start of the winter meetings. I'm heading to Orlando this weekend, so I'm looking forward to being out there and just kind of seeing what's going on over there, checking in with some people. Doing some work down there, but looking forward to seeing what happens with the White Sox as well. We've got free agency obviously kind of heating up lately. We've got the Rule 5 draft coming up next week, and a variety of things where we're going to get to know a little bit more about the 2026 White Sox in the pretty near future, considering, you know, think back to last year, Rule 5 draft, we weren't necessarily paying the most attention, and two of the best pitchers on the roster last season came from that draft. So, you know, obviously, we're going to be paying a little more attention this time around and putting some energy towards that. So today we're going to talk through just some free agent thoughts off the top, some of the big signings. Obviously, Dylan Cease, the biggest name to sign so far, former White Sox, gets $210 million. And then we'll get into some White Sox options, free agency, and then talk a little Rule 5 as well. Dylan, what's going on with you, man?
Nothing much. The White Sox offseason has been fairly quiet. You know, around this time last year, it was Garrett Crochet rumors were starting to swirl, and I believe it was the 13th of December where he actually got moved. So for the White Sox, this has been a fairly quiet offseason, at least so far. Now that could change, but yeah, I'm seeing all this facial hair chat in our comments.
I didn't think I was getting so much traction on this, man. Exactly. I don't know.
That was the first thing I said to Elijah when he hopped out was, I love the facial hair. But this yeah, just... so quiet offseason for the White Sox so far, but I think that we're going to start to see some moves happening in the winter meetings, whether that be White Sox or not. I think Dylan Cease and his 7-year, $210 million deal, that really set the market for a lot of these pitchers. And I think we're going to see the starting pitcher market especially start to get going, especially during the winter meetings and in the weeks after it.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think that's the indicator. Everything I'd been hearing going into this offseason, and it's funny because I believed this, but I also was like kind of skeptical to a degree. I heard from multiple people like Cease was the target pitcher in this class, which is interesting because, you know, you look around baseball, and this is a funny conversation Dylan and I had in our fantasy baseball chat. I think that the league values stuff more than it ever has. And Dylan Cease is the perfect example of that. Devin Williams, nonetheless, is another example of that, right? We'll talk about that one too. But like Cease, you see the ace in there. And it might not have happened last season. And it might not have happened two of the last three seasons, frankly, right? But you see it and you can envision it. And you can see from the angle of a team like the Blue Jays. For those who don't know, the Blue Jays, their major league team was great, right? Their pitching development has taken a massive step forward in the past couple of years. And Treya Savage is the prime example, but it's not just Treya Savage. They were able to turn guys like Kendry Rojas and, you know, and Cal Steven, who they had in from their draft, you know, had just been brought into their system the last couple of years into legitimate pieces they added at the trade deadline because their pitching development has gotten that much better that they had 5-6 pitchers legitimately on the prospect radar this season and were able to capitalize that and turn that into a World Series run, frankly. That was a big part of their run, right? So the Jays are the type of team with Cease where I think that's a guy who's going to end up looking like a good deal. And no 7-year, $210 million deal might be great in the long term. Right now, I think Dylan Cease is going to be a pitcher that the Blue Jays can have in the front of that rotation. I'm terrified to face Gosman, Cease, and Yesavage in a playoff series. Like, yeah. I don't want to face that. If I'm if I'm a fan of any AL East team, any AL team, frankly, like the Yankees and some of these other, in the Mariners, some of these other teams, like, that's a pretty daunting thing. And they, part of the issue with the Jays is, like, they didn't know exactly where they were going with Bassett and Scherzer and some of the other guys after, you know, the incredibleness of Yesavage and Gosman being a consistent vet. Also, you got a three-headed monster there, and I really like the fit overall.
And the thing with the Blue Jays and just their overall rotation, just in a, like, looking at all five pitchers, is, yeah, you had Yesavage and his top of the line stuff and his dominance in the playoffs and even in the regular season. But then you look past that, there's no real, like, true dog in that rotation. Like, yeah, Kevin Gausman is great and he's reliable as all hell. But then you get a guy like Dylan Cease, where, do you want to know how many days Dylan Cease has spent on the IL since 2020?
Like none, I think, or 10, 20.
It's two.
Yeah. He doesn't miss games. He doesn't miss games.
April 14th through April 16th of 2021. Those were the only two days in the last 5 years that Dylan Cease has been on the IL. I don't even think he misses.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how could he even be on the IL if it was less than 10 too? It might have just been, he was injured.
Maybe it was blister or something. I don't know. But like, right. Cease is one of the most reliable pitchers in all of baseball. And you look at some of the defense that he had behind him last year, the Padres did not give him any help. And then you're going to a Blue Jays team where there's some guys out there that can throw the glove around and just make plays for Dylan Cease. And yeah, you know, he's been unlucky at times with, you know, balls not falling his way and giving up too many home runs. But then you just look at the raw stuff he has. And when he's on, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. And I think that he deserves every penny of that $210 million contract. And, you know, it wouldn't shock me if Dylan Cease went out and overperformed the $30 million AAV value in the first, like, 2-3 years and then starts to taper off towards the end of it.
Of course.
But, like, for right now, I think that's a great move for the Blue Jays and one you need it. Yeah. You know, coming off of a World Series loss, you don't see many teams go out and sign $210 million ace pitchers. And I'm loving what the Blue Jays are doing.
Yeah, and then they got another guy about 2 hours ago who I also really liked. Cody Ponce is an interesting name. He just won the KBO MVP with possibly the greatest Korean baseball season of all time. Funny, interesting story where he never had success in the big leagues, went to Japan, struggled in Japan as well, but found a home in the KBO and was incredible. But some people look at that and say, oh, well, he couldn't stick it in the two major leagues, right? And like, yeah, there's some validity to that. Also, a lot of arsenal tweaks, a lot of adjustments on his movement profiles, a guy that looked pretty tantalizing. And you know, he was getting talks of, he's going to get at least 2 years to come back over and try and become a big league starter. The Jays get him for 3 for $30, which seems a little much, but like, the stuff is gross. And if he can be their five starter or their swingman / five starter, right, they don't need, now that they had Cease, right, they don't need him to be the guaranteed perfect cog in that rotation. Yeah, they're going to hope he's their five starter. And if he ends up being a swingman, five starter utility knife guy, great, right? If they want to add another pitcher at the deadline or whatever it might be, right? Like, you have flexibility there. $10 million a year is not going to kill you. And the Jays are just, they're going out. They're ready to spend. And I love it because they, you know, that's what should happen after teams win the world, you know, go to the World Series and fall one pitch to Miguel Rojas short of winning a World Series, right? You should go out and spend it. And that's something that I think is should be encouraged on all baseball. So it's cool to see what Toronto's doing. Those are the two, you know, already two starters added to the rotation, including, you know, obviously the best free agent, the only $100 million player to sign so far, being a $200 million, you know, Dylan Cease. And also, just shout out Dylan Cease for White Sox fans. Like, I love Dylan Cease. He's been one of my favorite pitchers to come through the White Sox organization, just from a super laid back, chill standpoint. But also just like who he is as a, you know, as a player and person. He's a very nice guy. He's always been super welcoming when he was with the organization before the trade. So I'm just happy that he was able to find a home and cash in, man. Good for him.
Yeah. You know, there's a reason why my name is not Cease. Like, Dylan Cease was one of my favorite White Sox in my entire 20 years of being a fan. He's probably, if not number one, he's number two or number three. And, you know, you look at what Toronto is building up there in Canada, and then you just look at Jose Berríos. Where does he slot in that rotation?
Good question.
Does he get traded?
I think he's expensive. It's a hard contract to move.
If you can find a team willing to take on that contract, I think he does get moved, because I mean, you got Cease, Berríos, Yesavage, Bieber came back. He accepted the QO, and then Cody Ponce. Like that's a solid five man rotation,
dude. I almost forgot Bieber. Honestly, I feel great about that rotation going forward. If Ponce is your swing man and Barrios, and then you see who kind of emerges between the two of them, this is a good spot to be in for sure. Barrios is coming off injury too, so I'm not sure exactly what his status is. But a couple other big time relievers off the board, neither that we thought were in play for the White Sox, so not of too much effect. But it does kind of showcase what the market looks like for the relief pitchers and for the potential closers, particularly right. Devin Williams signs 3 years. $51 million, but some weird deferral information, but generally 3 for $51 million with the Mets, who still are going to probably bring back Edwin Diaz because they're the Mets and they can spend whatever they want. And then Ryan Helsley goes from the Mets, who traded for him last year, 2 year deal, $28 million to the Orioles, which I like that move a lot for Baltimore. I think you're buying low on a guy who could be a top five closer in baseball, and Baltimore, you know, they need to make some additions to actually try and get back to the playoffs, and knowing that their window is quickly closing. Meanwhile, the Mets, like, they just spend what they want to spend, and they've been exceptional at developing pitching, so they're probably going to get Devin Williams back into elite form. And yeah, he had a rough year, but like, there were some positive signs down the stretch for sure. I still think he's going to be a very good really closer, well, eighth inning or closer for them.
That's the thing that I was going to say, like, if they get Edwin Diaz back, does he that's a crazy
Diaz is your closer. Yeah.
Yeah, Diaz is your closer, right. But then it's an interesting situation because, you know, we saw Ryan Helsley with the Mets last year and he couldn't pitch in the eighth inning at all. So
you got to remember, Devin Williams used to set up for Hader, though.
That's true. That's what I was going to segue into. Like if Devin Williams is your closer, I think he can be a very good one. But if he's your setup man, I think he's the best in baseball. Like, I don't think there's even a close two. And then with Helsley, like, is Felix Bautista hurt? Like, I haven't heard much of anything about
him. He's coming off a TJ, so I think he should be back this year. But I don't. It's probably like not to start the year, and when he comes back, or he's. Did he? Let's see.
I thought he came back.
He did come back. You're right, because it was TJ in 24, so he did come back.
Yeah.
Let's see.
So I wonder what the plan is with him.
He agreed to an arbitration first year of ARB. He came back at the second. He was actually good the whole second half of the year. Honestly, I really didn't. I thought it took him or first half of the year. Wait, no, I flipped. He was pitching the first half of the year, went down with injury second half of the year. So looks like it was shoulder surgery. So he'll be back, but not till mid. That's what I thought. Not till mid to late season for Batista.
So that makes sense.
It makes sense.
Because I was under the impression that he was going to be their ninth inning guy, and then Helsley would be pitching the eighth. But then the fact that he's hurt makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, and you can have kind of the eighth, ninth inning shared responsibility when he is back, depending on who's in the better spot at that point. I mean, that kind of is generally the free agents to sign. Alek Manoah signs with the Angels, which is just a funny random. I can't believe he got a guaranteed major league deal, but still was a good pitcher at one point, and that's the most Angels move ever. But aside from that, where that leads to White Sox, right? I mainly want to talk the pitching side of things because I don't think anything has happened that really changes any plans offensively, right? I still think the White Sox would love a Ryan O'Hearn or someone in that ballpark, probably settle for someone a tier below that, which is fine, but nothing has really moved in the hitting market. So I think the pitching is where we can start. Let's segue into the bullpen because we just talked about it. If the market – so Ryan, you look at a Devin Williams, you're looking at a 17 AAV. You go down to a Helsley, who's a tier below, I think we would agree kind of, but just not really even, I don't think necessarily. But Helsley goes to a $14 million AAV. From there, I just am trying to consider and conceptualize like where the market becomes attainable for the White Sox, right? I think that's kind of my most interesting consideration on the reliever market. Obviously, you know, the guys like Suarez, Diaz, those are no's. But then beyond that, like I don't think there's guys that are like totally out of range for the White Sox. I'm just trying to think through when I look at this class and think about next week, and you'd think that after those two signed, the reliever market, and I should tell Raisel Iglesias also signed for 16 for one. Older guy, but still 16 mil for a guy that's a good closer, but had a decent season, not his best season, right? Where does that line stop where the White Sox start to become in play for a good reliever? I think they're going to sign a reliever, but the more that I look at this market, and even with it being such a deep reliever market, none of these high-end guys are going to be. There's no world where they're spending over 10 AAV on a reliever in my eyes. And there's plenty of good relievers I like under that mark. It's not going to be any of these higher-end guys. Even a Pete Fairbanks, who I was like, oh, maybe that's the high-end, probably too high. There's a number of guys I still think are kind of too high. Where is that kind of line for you where you start to see it being possible, maybe?
I think around that like seven and a half to eight range is what I would say for like the upper echelon of guys. But I also think that we're going to see a lot of good relievers get lesser contracts than what you would initially expect them to get on just like the regular open market. If it was like, all right, let's say I'm looking through the spot track stuff. If Luke Weaver hit the open market last year instead of this year, I think he would have gotten significantly more than what he is going to get now. So like, if you can get him for, I don't know, $7 to $8 million on like a 1 year, maybe a multiple, a second or third year. I doubt he gets a third year, but like, if you can get Luke Weaver on like an $8 million contract, I sign me up for that. And then, you know, you keep looking down the relief market. And this is something we've talked about a lot on this show, especially. There's a lot of really good, or I don't want to say really good, but like serviceable upgrades to this bullpen that you're going to be able to get for $3 to $5 million that right. I think the White Sox should be all over that in an attempt to flip them at the deadline. Or, you know, maybe you find a good non-tender candidate with multiple years of control left, and you can develop him into a serviceable seventh inning guy. Like, that's, I think, is the dream scenario. Yeah. I think the White Sox should try and find some of those non-tender candidates and do what they did with Mike Talkman last year, sign him to an arbitration deal and see what they can develop him into.
Yeah. Okay. So some names that I just like top of my head, cause I agree with you. I think it's under 10 mil. It might even be under the 8 mil mark. It might be that more like six to eight for like one bigger reliever in that six to eight range. I'm not saying the number below that. But you know, I will, in that range, and then kind of below that, one or two relievers that are below the five range, right? You mentioned there. I think that that's kind of the logical aim. In that first range of like a higher end guy, right? I do think Luke Weaver is that top target. It still probably is a bit high. I know for JB, we have Luke Weaver at 2 years for like, I think 10 to 12 AAV, which is still probably somewhat out of range. But I don't think it's impossible. I think that could be in range. Below that, I think that kind of Caleb Thielbarg make a lot of sense. I think Hunter Harvey is another one that I like when I'm looking at these names. I think Kyle Finnegan could be just kind of barely in that range as someone who could still be a closing option, but you could keep it under 10 AAV potentially. Those are some of the names that stick out to me in that middle range, at least before you get into those 3 to 5 million guys.
Yeah, I'm looking through the spot track projection like tool right now, and while it's probably not the greatest for like what their actual market is, they have like Gregory Soto, Pierce Johnson, Mark Leiter, even guys like Sir Anthony Dominguez and Tyler Rogers in that bucket of around 8 million, where you can probably get them on around 8 million, but then you go down the list and I think you can find some, I don't want to say better, but like more cost efficient options in like, Sean Armstrong, Danny Coulombe, Andrew
Chafin, we've talked about.
Guys we've talked about. But one that I don't want to say I'm all in on, but like he was rough as a White Sox, but I kind of like Michael Soroka. I think I kind of do. Like, he had a good year, or not like a great statistical year in Washington.
Yeah, when healthy,
when healthy, and he had some good underlying numbers, and he was kind of good out of the bullpen, like in his White Sox career, especially towards the end of it. I don't say that I'm not going to say that I am fully on board with Michael Soroka, but if you told me that the White Sox got him to be like their long relief guy, maybe seventh inning guy out of the bullpen, I wouldn't hate it, because I mean, he's young, and when he's healthy, he's shown good stuff, especially out of the bullpen. So it's an unpopular pick, but I could kind of,
I don't mind it. Yeah. I can see the vision. I would like a buy low on Jordan Romano. Can I interest you in a Jordan Romano buy low? I mean, I think he gets more than this, but like SpotTrack has him at 2.7 million. I would take that any day. Easily. A two for 6 million or something. I think he ends up getting more like 2 for 10. But I think that's an interesting one to consider, of just a guy who, like, you know, is solid, and just can be, you know, he could plug. He could probably give you more upside potentially if some things click for him. I don't hate like a Drew Pomeranz, still a Cubs guy who you know has been hurt for half of his career, but had a really solid year when he was healthy with the Cubs, came back and actually was really incredible in his return to Major League Baseball after 3 or 4 years there. So there's a lot of guys. Like I just, the way I look at it is like what the Williams and Helsley and you know and Iglesias signings tell me is the top end guys are going to get paid. Yeah. And there is this free agency class more than ever. And anybody I talk to in this world, like the middle class is probably going to get screwed in this free agency class just because of the dynamics. And they haven't necessarily so far. I wouldn't say any of these deals have been like huge ripoffs for the player. Just these guys are getting into the market early. As the market progresses, it does seem like a lot of the middle tier guys are going to get kind of screwed in this demographic of just heading into the lockout next year and the way people are operating, right? So attack that market, right? Like let's jump on that. And the White Sox should be all over the middle tier guys that fall into the price range of the bottom third guys. Those are the targets, right? Let's get on these relievers who are good relievers, but are not going to get that upper tier money. Teams might be hesitant to commit more than a year to them. Give 2 or 3 years to one of these relievers in that range, in that middle range we're talking about, right? And on top of that, and this is perfect, somebody mentioned in the comments, I was just going to say this, you're essentially going to guarantee trading a reliever if he shows out to a contender. And I know you don't sign for that reason. You're not going to pitch that to someone necessarily directly, but it has to be somewhat of a consideration for some of these pitchers where if they can get paid more to go pitch for the White Sox and you can be on a young developing team and be a leader for the time you're there and then have the opportunity to get to know that if you show out, you're going to go have a big role on a playoff team. That doesn't hurt. It really doesn't hurt. And that's how it should be with relievers. And if they find one reliever that they're okay rolling with for a couple of years here, great. That's cool too. But you can be prepared and borderline expect to move some of these guys. And that's just the deal with relievers. Somebody else mentioned Emilio Pagan Wolf in the chat. I also like that name a lot. I think he could end up getting priced out just because he was so good in 2025. I do like that name a lot though.
Another name for the buy low options, I liked him when he was with Texas for basically the entire like latter half of the 2010s. Jose Leclerc, he was banged up this past year, but like you look at his 2022 and 2023 with Texas, it's 45 plus innings with a sub 3 ERA and some of the best strikeout stuff in the game. Like if you can get him on like a $4 to $6 million deal, I would love that because then you get a trio of flame throwing righties in him, Jordan Leisure, and Grant Taylor rounding out the back end of your bullpen. You can mix and match them seventh through ninth inning. And I would love that. I think that you would need to get another serviceable lefty. But I think that if you can get Jose Leclerc, I would be very, very down for that because if he can come back healthy, he's got some of the best strikeout stuff in the game.
Yeah, no, I'm down for that. I think that's a good idea as well. Getting over to the starting market, I'm going to explain to you a little situation. So today we had a conference at Just Baseball just to kind of plan out and map the 2026 season. And we took little breaks. I was organizing, making sure we had like 10, 15 minute breaks. And sometimes I was popping off camera to get some food, whatever. During one of the breaks, we were just starting to talk. I was like, what do you guys think about Tyler Mahle to the White Sox? I got laughed at today. I got directly laughed at for even considering the possibility that the White Sox would acquire a pitcher of that caliber. I got genuinely laughed off the screen by many people at my company for suggesting that's a possibility. Listen, I don't think the White Sox are going to get a starter of that quality. At the same time, I don't see a reason for there not to be a veteran starter who has legitimate, you know, 4 to 3 starter upside, right? I'm not saying it's a star. You're not getting a Zach Gallen. You're not getting, some of that tier of pitcher, Michael King, anybody. You're definitely not getting anybody with a QO, first of all, because the White Sox are not giving up a pick at all, obviously, given their current status. So even like, you know, as high of a tier as like, I don't know how high, there's a lot of mediocre starters, to be honest, but you're not getting the upper tier of starters. Beyond that upper tier, I don't see why Tyler Mahle is that crazy. I think there is legitimate reason for the White Sox biggest expense. And yes, I would love Ryan O'Hearn. I think there's a lot of logic to getting a solidified masher in the lineup to pair with the young guys. At the same time, I would not be upset at all if the biggest spend was a veteran starting pitcher who you have the versatility with to just, first of all, just take the pressure off the rotation a little bit. There's a lot of pressure riding on these young starting pitchers, and having the ability to be a little bit more patient with some of these guys, in my opinion, in 2026 is not a bad idea. With Schultz, with Hagen, Tanner, I feel like it's a little more ready at this point. But like, generally speaking, I like the idea, and I'm rambling on here, but like, I like the idea of taking some pressure off those young guys. And if it means spending a little bigger to have a starter you feel good about in your rotation, who you can also flip if you want to go that direction, Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. And that's why I think going for a 2-year deal or maybe even a 3-year deal, if it can have options, whatever, with a mid-tier starter rather than a 1-year deal for a low-tier starter could make a lot of sense for this team. That's how I see it.
Yeah. And, you know, you said it in like very briefly right there. There's going to be a lot of young guys, especially in the latter half of 2026, that, you know, them taking the ball every fifth day, it's going to be a struggle on them. But like, let's say Tanner McDougal breaks camp with the team. That's not an unreasonable thing to say. If we get to September, or August into September, and, you know, he's thrown 130 innings and his arm is starting to slow down because, you know, he's never thrown that much. You want to have a guy that you can lean on and say, all right, you know, you don't need to go 7 innings every single time. You can go 3 or 4 and then turn it over to the bullpen. And, you know, that might end up being like a 6-man rotation type of thing. But if you can have that established veteran in those later months of the year, I think it makes a lot of sense, because if you sign a guy to a 1-year deal, you're probably flipping him at the deadline if you can. But then let's say you sign a Tyler Molly to a 2- or 3-year deal. It makes a lot of sense for him to be that sort of, I don't want to say 6-man rotation, but it makes a lot of sense for the White Sox to have a 6-man rotation, especially if Noah Schultz is up, if Tanner McDougal is up, if any of the young arms are up in September. It makes a lot of sense for there to be a proven, established veteran to go out there and take the ball every 5th or 6th day.
Yeah. And look, Tyler Mahle had a solid season, but let's not act like Tyler Mahle is the staple of health or the staple of consistency, because he hasn't been throughout his career, right? So Tyler Mahle was on an $11 million contract last year. He's projected around $6 million in AAV. I think he does get a little higher than that. Even if it's 10, 2-for-20 for Tyler Mahle, for the upside that he can bring to the table. And I just, this is one example of a name. There's a lot of other names that I think fit in this bucket. I'm just saying it today because I got laughed at and I took offense to that, because honestly, I don't think that's a crazy thing to think that the White Sox, that could be their, you know, top signing. And that's still just, you know, something, right? I think it's reasonable. Yeah, he had a great year this year, so that could be the limiting factor. He was great this year when he was on the field. You know, hasn't pitched a ton of innings. He has 100-something innings combined over the past 3 seasons, right? So, like, but a 2.18 ERA this year was impressive. Then again, whiff numbers, strikeout numbers, pretty low. Probably got a little bit of, you know, luck on his side. The FIP and more, the 3.3 xERA, 4.2, right? So xFIP 4.4. So a guy that definitely outperformed the metrics a little bit this year. I'd be all in on that. I think it just makes a lot of sense. But there's plenty of other names. Who are some of the other ones kind of in that tier? Because again, we're not expecting any signings over that 10 AAV mark, give or take, right? Who are some of the guys around or below that mark that you think could make sense for that kind of one rotation ad?
I think he's probably a bit more expensive, but Michael Lorenzen, I think, could make a lot of sense. I think he's one of the more reliable arms of that like middle tier of guys where, you know, going to take the ball every 5th or 6th day and not put up elite numbers, but he's going to go out there and throw 160 ish innings every year. You keep on going down the list. I was going to say Frankie Montas, but he's been hurt, so probably not. You can maybe go like a John Gray. You know, he was all right. I don't think that he would be like my favorite ad, but I wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't hate a reunion with Adrian Hauser. Like, he was very good with the White Sox. You know, you can point to some of that being luck, but I think that he found something while he was here. And, you know, Brian Bannister is still here and Zach Bove. That is another reason why I would think that Michael Lorenzen would come over to the White Sox. Zach Bove was with the Royals last year. So was Michael Lorenzen. I don't know if they had some sort of special connection, but I think that Zach Bove could pitch Michael Lorenzen and be like, all right, look, we have probably a better, I don't want to say better pitching development than the Royals, but it might be. I'm really not sure. Jose Quintana, I mean, he's older, but I think I could get behind a reunion with him. And then a name that I don't want to say, it's similar to the Michael Soroka thing. Herman Marquez is one of the more underrated pitchers in all of baseball. When you look at his Coors numbers and his away from Coors numbers, it's like two completely different pitchers. And I think he just needs to get out of it. And I think he could be a very good buy low option for a team like the White Sox. Thank you, TJ. Yeah, Herman Marquez is a name that I would be pretty happy.
It's funny. I got hit with a, you'll get Herman Marquez and you'll be happy today on the call. So
I would be happy.
I wouldn't be thrilled. You could sell me on it. You could sell me on it.
I don't think that there's going to be a move for the White Sox this offseason, especially on the starting pitching side, where I'm going to be like, yeah, like amazing. This is perfect. I don't think that there's going to be that. I think that there's going to be a lot of or some moves that are be like, all right, yeah, that fills a hole. Let's move on to the next one. But I don't think that it's going to happen on the starting pitching side. I think that if a move like that were to happen, it would be on the offensive side for a Ryan O'Hearn, a Kazuma Okamoto. I don't know who else. Those are the two names that I see most linked to the White Sox. But like, I don't think that outstanding A plus move happens on the starting pitching side.
Yeah, you're probably right. I like Griffin Canning a lot, of just some of the names in that tier as well. I think the Mets made a lot of good tweaks with him this season when he was healthy. I think it'd be a cool opportunity to buy low. One other guy, this came back into my brain as I'm going back to relievers and not to go too much backwards, but Evan Phillips. Give me Evan Phillips on he's coming off surgery. He's coming off surgery, right? But give me Evan Phillips on a 1-1 2-year deal that backloads it for next season when he is healthy. Evan Phillips, when healthy, could get back to being a top 10-15 reliever in baseball if the White Sox are fine paying him this year to rehab, right? I'm open to it. I'm open to it for sure. That's another just one I thought of. But yeah, I like Canning on the starting side. There's a couple other just various names I wouldn't hate. But ultimately, like, it just, you know, any ad is a solid one. I think that it would make some sense to just give a veteran presence and a depth guy to this rotation just to take some of that pressure off of the young guys for sure.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't think that there's going to be A-plus signing for the rotation, just given how many arms the White Sox have and are going to have in the next 18 months or so, especially with, you know, Noah Schultz getting back on track. Hagen Smith looked great in the fall league. Tanner McDougal is on the 40-man and is probably going to be up in April or May, if not sooner than that. So I think when you have those three guys who are knocking on the door, and then you already have a Shane Smith, Sean Burke, Davis Martin, whoever, you can piecemeal a rotation together with those five names for now, and then maybe you go out and swing on a starting pitcher later on, or maybe all five of those guys develop into exactly who we think they're going to be, and you don't have to pay for pitching. Like that would be amazing. And we know that Jerry Reinsdorf doesn't pay for pitching. Like, that's just a given. But
unless it's Joe Kelly.
Or Liam Hendricks, or who else? Ryan Tepera.
Hendricks is a good deal. I don't mind that.
Yeah, I know. But like, you can't build a $70 million bullpen. That's just.
I hear you. I think that's completely right. A couple other things people just mentioned, though, for sure, in the chat. Danny Cullum, we've mentioned a number of times on the reliever side. So just giving that a shout, because I would love that as a veteran, as one of that middle lower half tier relievers who, you know, 2-for-8, 2-for-10. Sign me up 100%. That's
lefty,
kind of a no-brainer one.
Immediately.
Yeah, fits the pen immediately. I think that's an easy no-brainer for me in my eyes. Unless you got any other free agents, I think we can hold off on the hitting side. Next week, I'll hopefully have some, news from winter meetings, or just generally some intel, hopefully. We'll see how that goes, of course.
What day is the draft lottery?
Rule 5 is draft lottery is on...
I want to say Monday?
I think Tuesday. And then Rule 5 is Wednesday. Am I right about that? I think that sounds right. It's Tuesday and Wednesday, I believe, in one of the order. But it's, you know, I think that's going to be telling and interesting. Obviously, number one pick, that's a huge priority. The White Sox, like, I hate getting too ahead of myself with college prospects, with prep prospects, any of that. I think it's a slippery slope when you start like planning a year out for a guy. Because think about, you know, I'm trying to think of just some of the prime examples recently.
Vance Honeycutt.
LaViolette too. LaViolette was supposed to be the number one overall pick a year prior to the draft, right? Yeah. Ended up being a 20-something, isn't near a top 100. Like, you got to pace yourself. With that said... I have a lot of friends and people I really trust when it comes to talent evaluation. And a lot of those friends and people really, really, really believe in Rock Chulowski and really, really do. And a lot of those people also really believe in Grady Emerson. So if there is a world where it's number two, I don't think I'm mad about that at all either. I really hope it's a top two pick, obviously. I really hope it's top two pick. There's a lot of other guys that could be good in this draft class, but I think when you separate the boards, right, when you just look at college and you just look at prep separately, there's a clear one on each of those boards right now. And one of those two, for the White Sox, would be a very good position to be in, obviously.
Yeah, I think that we're going to start to see a lot of, I don't want to say hype around the White Sox future if they land the number one overall pick, but like there have been talks about the White Sox future being like, yeah, they don't have that blue chip guy. If you can land Rock Chalowski, it just makes the entire farm look so much better. Dare I say he's the best college shortstop prospect since Dansby Swanson?
I'd have to think about that, but you might be on there. You might be on there for sure.
I don't think that I can name one better.
I think that's very reasonable is what I would say. So, yeah. It's going to get interesting for sure. Aside from the draft lottery, which obviously just a lottery, the White Sox have the top odds, 27 point something percent. I'm hoping it hits, but aside from that, the Rule 5 draft, I'm with you. The Rule 5 draft is also Wednesday. It's Wednesday, right? So we're going to have some time next week. At some point, I'm going to hop on the pod, find some time at the Airbnb, hop on a pod and talk about the winter meetings. So we'll have more time to preview then. But just give me a brief rundown, Dill, because we've been talking about some names. We've heard some names and rumblings. Give me just a couple names that you would have on the radar for the White Sox in the Rule 5 draft.
I used to love my morning coffee until it stopped loving me back. The bloating, the discomfort, it just wasn't worth it anymore. Then I found Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee blended with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Now I get my morning ritual without the crash or the discomfort. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, you could win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Who have the first pick, by the way? So a choice of anybody, same thing as, or second pick, pardon me, right? Because it's just normal.
Yes,
so
second
have,
pick. Yeah,
right, second pick. Last year was first pick, Shane Smith. I don't really worry about the Rockies taking anybody of substantive value. So no offense, but I that's my regard. So who are the guys you kind of on the radar for you and just in general for the White Sox?
One of the names is, I believe I have five names. I'll start with the first one, Brendan Beck. He's an older guy. He's 27 from the Yankees organization. It's not like a really elite ceiling so much as it is just a safe floor and a guy who is probably limited to like a five starter long relief kind of role. But he throws four pitches. None of them are particularly hard, but he gets good chase and whiff on the four seam and slider. It's a tight slider around, what does that say, 84 miles an hour. It's a fun arm, but you wonder how much left in the tank there is, given the fact that he's 27. I think he's going to be 27 for the full next year.
Yeah, 27, but just turned in October.
Yeah, but like it's a fun arm, and I think that the White Sox, they did well in the Rule 5 draft last year with Shane Smith, and you know everybody keeps saying Mike Vassell was a Rule 5 pick. Yes, he was, but wasn't a Rule 5 pick by the White Sox. He was by the Rays. And then got DFA'd and the White Sox claimed him. So regardless, I think Beck could be an interesting one. And then I'll go to the next one if you don't have anything on Beck.
Yeah, I mean, I think Beck's a solid guy. I don't have a ton there. I think from what I've seen, the Yankees do a pretty good job developing some of those, you know, high floor pitchers, right? And I'm not opposed to it. I feel like I want to chase a little more oomph personally, but I could see some logic behind a guy who you know could be in the big leagues for you, and hopefully you tap into more, obviously, right?
Yeah, and then a second name that I really like, just only because he's 6'8", 300 pounds with a great mustache, RJ Pettit from the Yankees, or not the Yankees, the Tigers organization, no relation to Andy, not even spelled the same, it's Petit. 6'8", 300. He's a reliever, true reliever. Dealt with some injuries the past year, but a 34.4% K rate and a whiff rate over 40 on the slider. It's not particularly hard. It's around 84, but the sinker and changeup grade out really well, like 70 grade pitches. And you know he threw a lot more strikes this year. That was the thing that moved him into the bullpen, and he threw a lot more strikes this year. It was a 70.8% zone rate on that sinker and doesn't allow hard contact at all. And I think that he's a guy where the White Sox could take him and be like, all right, yeah, you pitch in the fifth inning or you pitch in the sixth inning every third or fourth day. And I think the White Sox could take him, and I think he could be a solid bullpen role for a team that doesn't really have a lot of bullpen options.
Yeah. I'm kind of in here. I can see the vision with Pettit. I just started looking at him earlier today because I really haven't had the chance to look into too many of these guys. But I think there's some validity. I think a reliever makes probably the most sense. I think, and maybe you're trying to chase another Shane Smith, and there's a guy that they really think can be that. But like, I do think a reliever makes a lot of sense, and a guy with some octane stuff. When Pettit got to AAA, you look at this season, right? He was in double, and then he got to triple. He gets to AAA, 23 innings down the stretch in 20 games at the AAA level, the strikeout rate was up towards the 35% range. It was only in the 27, right? And in double A, right? You see the strikeout rate rise up. Yeah, it came with some walks for sure, but pretty limited on the contact. He had some good BABIP luck against him actually too in AAA. So interesting note there, but just I think it's just a solid, could just be a solid pen arm who can fill some innings for you. And if you get a little more from him, great. And if not, then again, it's a rule five pick, right?
Yeah, you know, a lot of these guys are likely not going to be anything. You know, Shane Smith, I think, is a once-in-a-generation type of talent out of the Rule 5. And something I should have said off the top, I like all five of these names are pitchers, just given the fact that the White Sox have gotten significantly better developing, The White Sox have gotten significantly better turning around pitchers than hitters. I think that the White Sox are trying to be a reclamation hub of sorts. And I think the Rule 5 draft is a great way to sort of get a guy that you like just the underlying stuff, but there's still some more things that they need to polish off and, you know, get ready to be a big league arm. And like I said, Shane Smith was a perfect example of that last year, but I don't think that there's another Shane Smith in this year's draft. Another guy that I do like, guy who's been injured like basically his entire minor league career, Carter Baumler from the Orioles organization, only threw 39 innings this year, but it was a 10.44 K per nine with a 2.04 ERA. He's, like I said, dealt with injury, only has thrown, he threw 20 innings in 2024, 17 in 2023, and only 11.2 in 2022, which I believe that was his draft year. No, he was drafted in 2020. So yeah, he missed all of 2021 and only came back for the tail end of 2022, but he's got good stuff. He was finally healthy this year for more than 10 games. He pitched in 28. This was the first time in his entire career that he pitched in over 10. But yeah, like good stuff. He's gotten a lot more command on the fastball now. He's ticked up in velo too. I believe he got up to like 95 after sitting 91 last year. So maybe that's a sign that he's healthy. But I think Baumler could be an interesting guy that you buy low on. And, you know, maybe he's your long relief guy.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because this is your like swing for the fences and have no clue what happens. It's less than 70 career innings since being drafted in 2020, and a guy who pitched, who has 7 2/3 innings at high A or higher, or double A or higher, pardon me. So he's pitched less than a game's worth of innings at the upper levels and has a total of around 70 innings in his career in the minors across 4 seasons. So this is a injury, just he doesn't have the experience, frankly, to be in the big leagues. But sometimes Rule 5 is the chance where you want to take that swing at those types of profiles where you see it being a potentially, you know, upside incentivized pick. At the same time, like, there's a crap ton of risk here, right? So like, this is an interesting one to me. And I haven't seen too much of his stuff, but just looking at the numbers and looking at kind of the story here, right? The story is a guy who's really never been healthy, but you think has the stuff to be something, and you just take that risk and have him be the last guy in your bullpen who you just slowly get innings throughout the year. You couldn't, the only thing with this, and the only reason why I don't think they necessarily go this way is because I do think the White Sox like the idea of having someone that's able to eat some innings as their Rule 5 pick. He's not a guy that's going to eat innings. He's going to guy you're going to have to be very careful with and slowly work out. That's why I think it's less likely, but I could see a world where, you know, you take that upside swing, right?
100%. And, you know, if you want to chase upside, I think Alex Pham of the Orioles organization is another, I don't want to say slam dunk pick, but like, he's got the best strikeout minus walk percentage of any Rule 5 eligible arm. It's a 21%. So that's strikeout percentage minus walk percentage. A 21% means, let's say he was striking out 31% of batters, he only walked 10. It's a good relief arm. And he's a guy who has a really steep arm slot. It's a nearly 70 degree, like, so straight over the top. And with that, his fastball gets a lot of life at the top of the zone. It's a nearly 20-inch induced vertical break on that fastball. And then he's got three breaking balls. He's got a slider, changeup, and sweeper. Or sorry, slider, curveball, and sweeper. And he can throw some bulk innings. Like he was bouncing back between rotation and bullpen. I think that he could be somebody that the White Sox look at and be like, you know what, you might be the next Mike Vassell, maybe.
Yeah, I could see it. He has an interesting trajectory too, because this is a guy who was a reliever coming out of the draft, transitioned into being a starter actually in 23 and 24. This year comes off the injury and goes back into a relief role primarily with a couple starts that came earlier in the season. So an interesting dynamic there where maybe you look at this guy as someone who had innings built up previously in 23 and 24. And yeah, 25 was somewhat of a lost year for him, but you think he can still be a starter and you have him as this swing man, you know, like you said, Vassell, kind of a Swiss Army. Maybe he can be your spot starter. Maybe he can be a guy that can make some starts, but you have the flexibility of either type of role for a guy like Pham.
And another thing to note with Pham is, you know, a lot of these guys, they have, I don't want to say flaws, but like there's an area where you can point to and say like, all right, yeah, that is something that you need to improve on in order to be on the team for the full, what is it, like 90 days of service time. I forget how much you have to be on the active roster to gain those, like the entire arbitration years. But with Pham, he throws 63.6% strikes, and that's better than what you would expect for a guy who is bouncing back and forth between rotation, bullpen, injured list. So I think Pham is a decent name that the White Sox could take a look at. But then another one is Zach McCambly from the Marlins organization, another 2020 draft pick. He was a guy who posted a really good year this year, a 2.9 ERA and a 37.6% whiff rate. That's really good. He has a 6-pitch mix, which for, I want to say he's a reliever, right? Yeah, he's a reliever. 6-pitch mix, cutter, slider, four-seam, sinker, curveball, changeup. None of them are particularly hard. The fastball's around 94. But he, like I said, he gets crazy whiff rates. His slider had a 50% whiff rate in AAA this year, which is nutty. The cutter, in my opinion, is his best pitch. He throws it for strikes at a very high rate, gets some whiffs on it, gets some chase. So I think if you want to look at a guy who you can immediately slot in to that bullpen, I think Zach McCambly is a good option because all of his pitches, but a lot of them grade out as serviceable major league options for a reliever. And, you know, as a reliever, you're probably not going to be throwing 6 pitches. So if they can reduce it down to his best 3 or 4, I think McCambly could be a good option for the White Sox.
Yeah, 100%. I like that one. I think everything I've heard from the Marlins infrastructure and the Marlins brass and stuff, it seems like there's a lot of really good things going on the pitching development side. Obviously, Robbie Snelling, Thomas White, like you've got some high-end guys there, but it does seem like they have an organizational trend in the right direction on the pitching side, and they have for years at this point, right? So I'm all for a guy that had that level of success at the upper minors, honestly, and has a little bit more depth of experience than the other names you mentioned there. I got two more names to throw at you, and I don't know if you're familiar, but just guys, when I'm just looking through some lists, Hayden Mullins is a name that I was intrigued by during the season. Red Sox left-handed prospect who's a guy that's just kind of an interesting one. I talked about him on the call up, which is our prospect show at Just Baseball a couple weeks, probably a couple months ago at this point, I guess, right? During the season, he had a really nice stretch this year, or just in, you know, just getting, he had some injuries, but then he got back and had a good stretch in Double A of 15-20 starts where he was really steady for a while. Strikeout rate in the upper 20s. A guy that just kind of, you know, meets that production. Good stuff, not great stuff where he needed to be protected. Boston has done an excellent job churning out some pitchers in the past, you know, these last 2 years especially. They've really taken their pitching development into another tier, right? It's kind of this low gyro-y slider and a sweeper. He pairs kind of the two variations of a slider, right? Mixes in a changeup as well, but it's kind of just a quality lefty who I think could be that 5-starter and or swingman type of guy.
I mean, yeah, looking at his 2025 season, it was 101.2 innings with a 2.21 ERA. He got, I don't want to say a bit lucky, but it was a 95.6% left on base rate in high A this year and an 81.4% in Double A. That number likely stabilizes at around a 70%. It was at a 70.3% last year in high A, and then this year it spiked up to 83.2%. So, you know, if he doesn't get that left on base luck, maybe the numbers look a bit different. But let's say that the White Sox do take him. I think that he could be a guy where, yeah, you know, like you said, a 5th starter, long relief guy. I think he could be a pretty good one.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I think it makes some sense for sure. Second one to wrap up here, and then I'm gonna take the night off. It's late. I know everybody appreciate everybody who's hanging out. Actually, yeah, I realize it's, for me it's only 8, and I'm exhausted because I've been up since early. But for most of you, it's 10 p.m. Yeah. So it's kind of late. Jack Choate of the Giants. I don't know how to say that name. I think it's just Jack Choate, maybe, of the Giants, left-handed pitcher, yeah. Who was a small D2 college guy, a name that I just remember on terms of just pure numbers standing out to me at times this year. Huge left-handed guy, but throws like 88. Funny yeah. profile for sure, where it's really dependent on the command and the movement, right? I think a lefty in general just makes some sense for the White Sox, right? I know we've talked about that from the bullpen perspective, obviously needing some left-handers. Really, really good changeup, which I do think kind of fits the White Sox, you know, movement profiles they've been looking for to a degree. It's a high movement fastball, but you know, it performs well even being at 88 miles an hour. And then you're looking at a pretty high-end changeup, a variety, a slider, and kind of just like somewhat just relying on being, you know, effective and confusing enough. He definitely has had iffy control at times, but I do think there's some intrigue there from just a unique, weird profile of another huge lefty, which the White Sox have a couple of, obviously.
Yeah, and you know, he's made how many starts is that? What is that? 56 starts over the past 2 years, right, covering nearly 220 innings. That'll play. Like, yeah, he's yeah. likely not going to be anything more than, you know, that five starter, but you know, it's a reliable arm where, again, you know, you can put him into that long relief role and get him 2-3 innings every third or fourth day, and you know, then you look up and he's on a team for that 7-year arbitration period. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of names that the White Sox could take in this Rule 5 draft, and you know, we're going to dive into them after they get taken, and hopefully they find the next Shane Smith. I doubt that's going to happen, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be interesting to see kind of what happens in that draft. Obviously, do you in a week we reacted to this 2 weeks ago, but 2 weeks later, and you know, we're a week out from the Rule 5 draft. Where are you at with thinking or not thinking? We'll wrap on this, and then we're going to call it a night. Where are you at with thinking or not thinking any of the White Sox unprotected players will get taken in this draft?
I think the two with the highest odds are Peyton Paulette and Ben Peoples. I think that both of those guys have big league caliber stuff where a team can look at them and say, yeah, you know, you're going to be in our bullpen and you're going to pitch every fourth day or every fifth day after our starter gets taken out and it's a blowout. We're winning or we're losing. I think both of those guys have qualities in them where it would entice a big league team to say, yeah, we're going to take you. We're going to take a shot on you. And they don't have pressure on them to perform. Like, I doubt that a good team is going to take a guy like Peyton Paulette or Ben Peoples where, yeah, they've got some kinks that need to be worked out of them. But I think that if, let's say, the Angels take Ben Peoples or Peyton Paulette, they're not going to be competitive. They have not, well, you know, they're trying to be competitive, but even though they won't be. But I think that you can hide a bullpen arm a lot better than you can hide a starter. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I don't think Mason Adams gets protected. I don't think, or gets taken. And I don't think Shane Murphy gets taken either.
Yeah. And that kind of ties into what we were saying about targets for the White Sox, right? Like a lot of these guys you're mentioning are guys that you can sort of hide in the bullpen and let develop. But, you know, again, Shane Smith is somewhat of an outlier here. This is not a common pick in the Rule 5 draft. And obviously it was a good pull by the White Sox, and that's great. But like, you can't expect that. So it is often more logical to go for a pure reliever who, you know, you can take it easy with as the last guy in your bullpen, but still keep on your roster and hope they continue to develop in a positive direction, obviously.
100%. And you know, yeah, let's say that Mason Adams or Shane Murphy gets taken. I really have a hard time believing that they're going to be on a team's 26 man roster for that full, I'm spacing on how many days it takes for them to have that, just have control over them. But I doubt that they're going to be able to keep them on their roster for that window of time where, you know, if you get taken off the 26 man roster, you go back to the original team. So I think that a reliever is probably one that the White Sox would most likely lose and probably most likely take. But, right, you know, if Mason Adams or Shane Murphy does get taken and they end up sticking with their new team, that would be a tough one because I like both of those guys and you would wonder what would they have been with the White Sox. So I think Paulette and Peoples are the names where I look at and am starting to worry that they could get taken and stay away from the White Sox.
Yeah, 100%. That's all we got for today. I think that's a wrap. We were able to talk some free agency, some Rule 5 stuff. Like I said, I'll be at the winter meeting, so make sure you're keeping up with the Future Sox page. Our guy Adrian White has been really taking the Future Sox social medias to another level. If you haven't checked it out, we're now back on the Instagram that hasn't been used for many years. As we move into 2026, we really want to try to, you know, as part of being Just Baseball's network now, we're trying to build out a little bit more comprehensive coverage across platforms. So make sure you're checking out the Just Baseball Instagram page as well as the Just Baseball Twitter, and then Future Sox, of course, Future Sox on both Twitter and Instagram. Hopefully Facebook soon. I'm trying to recover our account on Facebook. So hopefully we'll have some content flowing across social medias for Future Sox. And then next week, winter meetings, I'm going to be out there trying to get some interesting information. I think Adrian might actually be there too, but generally just hoping we get some White Sox news so we can talk about it next weekend. We'll definitely be able to talk about the Rule 5 draft pick next week as well.
100%. It's going to be a fun next week for you and White Sox fans.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And number one pick. Let's make it happen. By the time we talk to you guys next time, hoping the number one pick belongs to the Chicago White Sox. We will talk to everybody. Go ahead.
This will be the last podcast without Rock Chalowski being on my, like, he's going to be right up there. He's going to be above my bed. I will pin a picture of Rock Chalowski above my bed if we get the number one overall pick.
Love to hear it. We'll talk to you guys next week on the.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.